Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The oil spill in the Gulf of Louisiana is being called the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history. It's now been 6 weeks since the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig exploded and sank. BP is attempting yet another fix, but many say the end may be months away. Joining me in the studio to talk about the situation in the Gulf is Stephen Power. He's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, joining us from a studio at KUT in Austin, Texas. Tad Pocic, he's chair of petroleum and geosystems engineering at the University of Texas. And, of course, you're invited to join us as well, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning to you, Stephen. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks to be.
And Tad Pocic. Good morning to you, sir. Explain for us, if you would, BP's newest plan.
Well, I presume that question is for me. Well, that plan is essentially relies on sawing off the riser pipe above the blowout preventer and hooking up to it a contraption that would link it to a one-mile pipe leading straight to a ship on the surface of the sea. And through that pipe, they hope to suck in most, if not all, oil and gas oozing or actually flowing at a high rate from the well.
And, Ted, what are engineers saying about the chances that this is actually going to work?
Well, nothing is certain in this very difficult, harsh, hostile environment. So nobody's making predictions that the success is ensured. But privately, I should say that I feel better about this attempt than much better than about the top kill and junk shot attempts that failed previously.
And tell me, from your perspective, what are the risks?
Well, there are several risks. They may not be able to saw off the pipe in a clean way so that there is a tight junction with this, lower marine riser package, LMRP, that they will insert on top of the pipe. The flow rate is definitely quite high of both oil and gas that is escaping from the oil into the lower pressure seawater. And so there's going to be essentially, trying to lower something into a very fast flowing seven fire hoses. And that always is has some risks associated with it. But, I feel reasonably comfortable that they will succeed here.
And, of course, when you're talking about the onset of hurricane season, you're simply adding to the risk, I would presume.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, you would not do something like this during a hurricane. And so that's another interesting twist that is added to already a very complicated situation. I should say that, the last thing you want to do right now is to abruptly stop this well from flowing, given all the stress, mechanical stress that it has been under. So from that point of view, trying to produce the well through this marine riser package is probably the best they can do under the circumstances.
But tell me what happens if, in fact, a hurricane does come along. What happens to the efforts? What happens to the oil?
Well, well, again, it depends, you know, where the hurricane will be, what will its strength be, etc. So there are many factors I know nothing about. But essentially, if you were to, you know, remove the surface ships, then you're going to have to do something about the riser, and essentially you're going to have to disconnect it at the wellhead and attempt to shut in the well. And again, this can be done. I would hope that there will be enough time to produce this well at the highest possible rate and thus lower the pressure at the wellhead as much as possible.
Ted Pacek, he is at the University of Texas at Austin. Joining us now here in the studio is L.G. Holstein. He's with the Environmental Defense Fund. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here. When you look at the risks here involved in this latest effort, how do you see it?
Disappointing. We've had a solution every few days, and then we've had a disappointment. And I think we're getting to the point now where we're getting to the last hopes. And I think ultimately the relief wells that have been underway now for several weeks may be ultimately the only thing that brings this well to a stop. But we certainly hope that other things will work before then.
But when you say it's the last hope, what do you mean?
A relief well is simply drilling another well along the sides, you know, stepped out a bit, and then after it gets below the seabed, they angle in to the damaged well. And that is a surefire way, if assuming they can connect it. Think of it as trying to connect one straw to another one a mile or two down, and then they can pump in cement and mud and so forth and stop the well that way. It's probably the best hope, but it's the last hope. The problem with it is it doesn't happen until July or maybe even August. And so what we need to do is to try other things before then, and that's exactly what the government and BP are doing.
L.G. Holstein is Vice President for Land, Water, and Wildlife Programs for the Environmental Defense Fund. Turning to you now, Stephen Power, the administration is taking steps on its own. Explain what it's doing.
Sure. Well, today, Attorney General Eric Holder is going to be in New Orleans talking to state attorneys general and holding a press conference. A number of senators have asked the Justice Department to look into whether any laws were broken by BP that contributed to this accident. So that's one way in which the federal government is moving to respond to this.
Give us an example of what those laws might be.
Well, it could involve, potentially issues of negligence in how they were maintaining the well. It could involve not following through and not doing the things that they had said that they were going to do when they filed their oil spill response plan with the federal government. It could be any number of things. And the administration lately is also really trying to show to the public that it is in control of this situation. And it's a very delicate thing because the fact is, as they also acknowledge, the government does not really have the technical expertise to stop this leak.
So therefore, they're making Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen
absolutely
the chief
yes.
spokesperson.
Yes, they're putting Thad Allen more in a more visible role to be the visible face of this response team in recent weeks. The face of it, to some extent, has been Doug Suttles, the chief operating officer for BP. The administration clearly is trying to show that it's in control, and they're trying to position Mr. Allen as more the public face.
So does that mean we're going to have daily briefings now?
It looks like we're going to have more regular briefings, and with Mr. Allen being more the person doing the talking.
Stephen Powery, he's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Isn't Robert Reich, former Secretary of Commerce, calling for President Obama to put BP under temporary receivership? And if that were to happen, what would that mean?
you know, there are a lot of novel ideas that in recent weeks have started to come up. You had Senator Nelson of Florida last week raising the idea of the military taking charge of this operation. There other industry experts have raised the idea of maybe the government could hire another oil company to fix the leak, another company that might have a lot of expertise in deep water operations. But most of these options have been ruled out by the administration so far. Again, all because in addition to the fact that BP has the technical expertise, BP is the company and the entity that has the familiarity with this site in deep water. And so you would risk potentially, if you bring in a different party, losing that familiarity. I'm not familiar with all the aspects of Mr. Reich's plan because it's one that he just apparently floated in the last couple of the last day or so. But there, I think what you're seeing is this: just as the government is unable to stop this bill, there's just more and more ideas being tossed out there.
LG.
Well, Diane, the truth of the matter is, and it's so starkly demonstrated by this accident, is there are only a handful of companies worldwide that do this kind of drilling in this deep water. It's exotic frontier work. And BP has already brought in people from all over the world with expertise in deep water drilling, and they still haven't been able to cap the well. I make no apologies for BP, but I think the government, it has to be said, simply doesn't have the resources to do this job without the private sector.
What do you think about the pursuit, perhaps, by Eric Holder of criminal charges?
As we learn more from the media about the mistakes that have been made, the shortcuts that apparently were taken, we have to be concerned about that. But that ultimately isn't the near-term solution.
L.G. Holstein of the Environmental Defense Fund. Short break. Right back. And we're talking in this hour, of course, about the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Here in the studio, L.G. Holstein. He's with the Environmental Defense Fund. Stephen Power is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. On the line with us from Austin, Texas, is Tad Pocic. He's chairman of Petroleum and Geosystems Engineering at the University of Texas at Austin. We'll open the phones in just a few moments. Here's an email from Julia, and I'll direct this to you, Ted Pocic. She says, I've heard that when oil companies drill in deep water off Canadian shores, they are required to drill relief wells along with the main wells, so they're ready to be used in the event of a mishap. Would you please ask about this? Why don't we require relief wells to be drilled before there is an emergency? Ted Pocic.
Well, first of all, I'm not aware that there is such a requirement in Canada. Think about it this way. If you drill a relief well together with the actual well, you are essentially doubling the chances of a mishap. And so, you know, you may prepare to drill that relief well, you may be stationed, but I don't believe that you're going to be advancing drilling of the relief well considerably, and it's not being done in the North Sea, and it certainly is not being done in the Gulf of Mexico.
And I get you, L.G. Holstein, know nothing about Canadian law.
Well, I do know that they do not drill as a regular in the regular course of business. They do not drill relief wells. But I think what the questioner's point brings to the fore is the issue of the cost considerations here. If you required relief wells, you would double the cost or triple the cost of drilling. And it is this trade-off between cost and safety that goes to exactly the heart of the problems we have to solve with America's offshore drilling.
Stephen Power, here's an email for you from John in Akron, Ohio. When was the actual permit for this well approved?
It was, I believe, last spring of 2009.
So just recently.
About a year ago.
And that, of course, brings into question the whole Office of Minerals and...
Yeah. The Minerals Management Service is the agency that regulates offshore drilling. The Obama administration has recently announced that it's going to break up this agency to end what it calls the conflicting missions of the agency. That is, its responsibility to essentially maximize offshore drilling in the sense of with the goal of maximizing revenue, royalty revenue to the government, and at the same time to regulate safety and environmental performance.
People across the country are so concerned about what's happened here. Can you, LG, give us a sense of how devastating this has been to the area thus far and the extent of the efforts at cleanup?
We don't know the extent of the damage, and so we don't know the extent of the cleanup that will be required. What we do know is that we have now surpassed the Exxon Valdez in terms of the seriousness of this spill. It is in the oil is coming into a very fragile environment, the wetlands, the coastal wetlands, which were already being degraded at the rate of a football field every single hour, wetlands sinking and disappearing because of all the industrial activity in the area. We have to turn that around. The cleanup is at the moment confined to trying to skim oil at the surface for the most part, but we're very concerned about what's happening below the surface where there's some evidence of large amounts of oil moving subsurface.
And we're joined now by Congressman Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Thank you.
I know you have questions about the claims that BP has actually made. Give us a sense of those questions.
Well, for example, what does BP know about these giant oil plumes, and when did they know it? Yesterday, I sent a letter to BP asking for more information about these giant plumes, this toxic mix of chemicals and oil out in the ocean, and I did so following media reports where the BP CEO, Tony Hayward, claimed that BP had found no evidence of underwater oil plumes at all, even though they had been discovered and documented by independent scientists. So in this instance, BP means blind to plumes, and I think that the confirmation of the presence of large quantities of oil subsurface could help to inform cleanup and response efforts, and it's vital that there is unfettered access to all relevant data or analysis. And on that one question, for example, that's just yesterday, I just think that Tony Hayward and BP are continuing to deny what has already been documented scientifically.
But now tell me about the efforts to independently verify the data that BP has released.
Well, there are scientists from the University of South Florida and Southern Mississippi that have work to identify these plumes, and the NOAA and the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration and other federal agencies are out there doing the work as well. But I just think it's not helpful for BP to continue to try to downplay the magnitude of this problem.
Congressman Markey, this whole situation has got to be so frustrating for you as a legislator, but certainly for those members of the public who are watching all this as it unfolds. What action would you like to see the federal government take at this point?
Well, I think we need to put in place strong government regulatory oversight of the oil industry. We just can't allow that to continue the way it has. They basically co-opted the regulatory agency that was responsible for supervising it. We need to ensure that there are 21st century diagnostic and intervention solutions, which we put into place for the future. We can't allow for this kind of a process to unfold where the oil company is making it up as they are going along. Obviously, the president needs set up this commission, and the Congress will actually have to give it the subpoena powers for it to be effective. We have to keep the spill cam video up so that this can be monitored on an ongoing basis by the public. And I would say, finally, that we need to pass a comprehensive energy bill, the bill that Henry Waxman and I passed through the House of Representatives last year. Senator Kerry and Graham and Lieberman have one pending in the Senate right now. We just have to move to a wind and solar all-electric vehicle, plug-in hybrid vehicle future, so that we no longer continue to pretend that with 2% of the world's oil reserves, we can consume 25% of the world's oil on a daily basis.
And finally, does that mean you think that offshore drilling should be completely halted indefinitely?
I think the president is right that we need a moratorium while we learn the lessons of what happened here, implement tough new safety standards and guaranteed response capability before any new leases are permitted out in the ocean. But at the same time, you know, it's a signal to us. It's time for us to move on and use our great American technological capabilities to invent the new energy technologies of the 21st century.
Stephen Power, The Wall Street Journal, has a question.
Chairman Markey, I was wondering what you think of how this panel should be set up by President Obama. One of your former colleagues, Senator John Breaux of Louisiana, who is now actually a lobbyist for Shell, was quoted in the New Orleans Times-Picayune today as saying that he thinks it's important that this panel include some representation of the oil and gas industry. And I was wondering, would you support that? Do you think that there should be some industry officials on that panel?
Well, I think that Bill Riley, who is the Republican co-chair, is actually on the board of Conoco.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And LG.
Congressman Markey's right on. We absolutely need to learn one of the lessons from this bill, which is that we can no longer continue to rely indefinitely on fossil fuels. Oil will remain part of our energy mix for some time to come, and so that's why we need tougher new regulations to control it as it goes forward. But a couple of things the congressman didn't mention, including one thing he deserves a great deal of credit for, and that is he's gotten BP to agree to $500 million science program. And one of the things that we have learned from the Exxon Valdez is that you have to have an ongoing science-based monitoring program because the impacts on the environment continue for months and years.
How much do you think this whole disaster is going to cost BP, Congressman Markey?
It's impossible to know because we don't know when this tragedy is actually going to be brought to an end. We have no idea if if they're going to be successful this week in putting the cap on the well. And even after they've done that, even if we assume that they are successful, it is clear that there will still be oil leaking out of that well until sometime in August when the relief wells are finally completed. So we're going to have to – it will take years, actually, to determine what the full magnitude of the damages are that BP will have to pay. And one of the contingencies, which are still – which is still impossible to fully measure, is what happens during hurricane season. Where will this oil be carried throughout the entire Gulf region? All of that will ultimately be used in order to determine the measure of damages.
Congressman Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm going to open the phones now. We have many callers waiting. 800-433-8850. First to Putney, Vermont. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for the show. My question is just that I've only heard from a couple of other sources the potential use of explosives to seal the well. I mean, everything that BP seems to be doing while that oil is gushing into the Gulf is to try to save their investment and continue to be able to use that oil field. And for another 2 months, we have to watch oil come gushing in when we could blow that wellhead up and seal it. It's been done by other countries before, either with conventional or the Russians use small nuclear devices to seal deep sea oil well leak.
All right. Ted Potsick.
If I may respond to this.
Sure.
This is actually, in my mind, a very unreasonable solution. When the wellhead is blown up, chances are that the oil will gush through the underlying strata of relatively soft sand and will come oozing to the sea bottom from various random places. I think the very last thing one ever would try to attempt is to blow this well up.
On land, when you have a wild well, it's on fire, like in Kuwait, in the first Gulf War, explosives do work. But underwater, I agree completely, it's exactly the worst thing you could possibly do, and it would surrender all opportunity to regain control of the wellbore. Yeah.
All right.
That's a terrible, terrible suggestion.
Okay. To Pontiac, Michigan. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Diane. I'm worried about what happens when the oil spill starts affecting Mexico. I mean, the hurricanes are going to come. The currents are going to take it. Does Mexico have any legal recourse against BP?
What do you think, Todd Patrick?
Well, it's an interesting question because during the July 1979 Ixtoc 1 spill, which was the second largest spill in history of 140 million gallons of petroleum spilled into the Gulf of Mexico, Mexico, in fact, refused to reimburse Texas and the United States, quoting its sovereign rights. So there is a long history of not cooperating in this arena.
Stephen Power, do you want to add to that? Okay. And LG.
Well, I think it underscores the point that the scope of this spill, of this disaster, not only is closing down 25% of American fisheries, but now threatens other countries as well. And when you have an unrestrained, unstoppable, it seems, well like this, the damage goes on and on and on, and that's why Congressman Markey made the point. We don't know yet the extent of this. We just know it gets worse every day.
All right. To Greenbelt, Maryland. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for taking my
call. Sure.
Is there anything we as private citizens can do to get BP's licenses revoked because of their negligence? And my second question would be, why didn't BP try this last effort earlier before waiting until the day before hurricane season?
Stephen Power.
Well, on the second question, they were going in the order of things that they thought would be the most effective, made the most sense to do, and what they wanted to do was to stop the leak. And this latest effort is not aimed at stopping the leak, but containing it. And so they were essentially going in the order of which of things that they thought could actually stop the leak.
But was there also an effort to preserve the oil for the company, LG?
Well, it's certainly the case that this this oil from this particular well will ultimately be lost to the company, at least from this well. If we get back to a time where new rules are in place and the company or some other company is allowed to drill into this same field, the well ultimately could be recovered. The oil in the field could be recovered.
LG Holstein, he's vice president for Land, Water, and Wildlife Programs for the Environmental Defense Fund. We'll take a short break. When we come back, more of your emails, your phone calls. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. By the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing. ConstantContact.com. This is NPR.
Bonobos are a female-dominated and peaceful species of great apes, but they're on the brink of extinction in the wild. As part of our ongoing Environmental Outlook series, we examine lessons from bonobos and efforts to save them. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And here's a question about the BP oil spill from our website. It's from Peggy, who says, what happens if nothing works to stop the flow of oil? How much oil is down there? How long will it continue to spill into the Gulf? Is this oil reserve connected to other reserves? If so, will it be drawing oil from them? LG Holstein.
I don't even want to think about that possibility, but if we have to confront it, here's the answer. The reason oil companies go into these ultra-deep water frontier environments is that they're in search of the huge new so-called elephant finds, huge fields of oil that have not been tapped before, unlike most of the oil, for example, onshore. And so what that means, and that's why they spend billions of dollars, because they're going to get all of that money back and plenty of profits. That means the oil will spill if they fail to stop it for years, not weeks or months.
Ted Patek, would you agree?
Yes, I completely agree that the oil would continue spilling for years. I also, as a petroleum professional, do not admit a possibility that ultimately will kill that well.
I'm not sure I understand your last point, Ted.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I'm saying is that ultimately we shall kill this well.
You're an optimist.
No, I'm a professional.
Well, I hope you're right. And let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning, Chuck.
Thank you, Diane. And I think my question may have been partially just answered. But here's the question. I have been confused, and I was hoping your panelists could definitively resolve this for me. Is the oil company drilling at this high-risk depth because that is the best location to locate the resource, or is it because of public sentiment and governmental regulations that force them into this high-risk position? Could you please help me with this question?
LG.
There was a columnist who tried to suggest that somehow or another this oil could have been reached from near shore. That's not true. The companies wouldn't be spending this kind of money to pursue this oil if they could get it more easily. And the fact is that they do have to go into the deep water if they want to produce this particular field.
Ted.
Well, this is actually an excellent question that brings other questions to mind. We are now in an increasingly oil rate constrained world. That is, we cannot produce more and more oil each year compared to the year prior. The only opportunities for the large international companies that still exist are the deep offshore prospects, because they're so difficult and simply nobody else, including most of the national oil companies, is looking for these prospects. You should realize that these giant companies now control less than probably 17% of the producible oil on this planet, and most of it is controlled by the national oil companies in the big oil-producing countries. And so it's a must if we want to continue producing oil.
And so far we've been talking about the big picture, the oil companies, but now we're joined by Mike Frenette. He's the captain of a charter fishing boat out of Venice, Louisiana. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Mike, I know you've been completely shut down for the past 3 weeks. Give us a sense of the situation as you see it.
Well, right now, it's a devastating part of our lives, our time of our lives, and the uncertainty is really what's perplexing to us, because, as you stated, our business, as well as every guide and charter boat operator out of the Venice area, has been shut down for three and a half weeks now, and this is an extremely busy time of the year for us, and we have absolutely no business, no end in sight. And, we were, the first couple of weeks, we were trying to think positive and everything would be done and everything would be finished with. And quite frankly, it just seems like everything that we've heard from BP in reference to the flow of the oil has been, not even close to the truth.
So how optimistic are you about this newest effort they're about to begin, even though it probably wouldn't bring relief until August?
Well, I don't know how I could even use the word optimistic at this point, because, we went through a period as well, I'm sure you know, and the rest of the country knows, last week, or just simply 4 days ago, BP was trying to put the top hat over it and cement it so that we would stop the flow. And this was a period of 3.5 days, and we continuously on the news everywhere was reported that, according to BP officials, everything was going according to schedule. Even, the presidents of the company and vice presidents of the company were getting on and saying, everything is going according to schedule. We're going to stop for about 6 or 7 hours. We're going to test the pressure at the bottom of the well and make sure that everything is all right. And then again, come back and say, everything is going according to schedule. Well, when I hear this, everything is going according to schedule, to me, that's a positive statement that we're working in the right direction, and that hopefully this well was going to be capped off. And then all of a sudden, you have news reports coming out like crazy that nothing's working. It's not working. Well, how, after 2.5, 3 days, when they're purporting that everything is going according to schedule? I'm not really sure what their terminology of everything is going according to schedule, if their terminology of everything is going according to schedule is negative, then they should have let the people know that. Mm. To me, that was more of a positive statement.
I can certainly hear the frustration in your voice. What have you heard about individuals who've been exposed to the oil and or the dispersants actually becoming ill?
Well, the only thing that I've heard is the same as you, is what's been on the news. I haven't spoken to any individual directly themselves have been affected, but we have had at least 7 or 8 fishermen, commercial fishermen from this area working on the oil spill, that a couple evacuated themselves personally to the hospital, and about a half a dozen others were taken to the hospital by ambulance or other measures and reported by the hospital that they were, all their symptoms as far as nausea, headaches, aches and things like that were all associated to possible chemical contamination. And, you know, my real main concern is the chemical dispersant that they've been using pretty much from the onset of this accident, the Corexit 9500, I believe is what it is, and it's a highly toxic chemical. It's actually made to use in small, for small oil spills in small amounts. In fact, the EPA, executive director Lisa Jackson, had sent a memorandum to BP, I don't know, maybe 10 days ago now, 2 weeks ago, asking them to quit using the Corexit 9500 because of its toxicity levels, because of the amount that they're using in the Gulf, and because we don't have any current day information as to what the devastation could be from a result of using this chemical. Gave them 48 hours to find another dispersant and start using another dispersant. They, in turn, after that 48 hours, sent a memorandum or a letter back to the EPA saying, we're going to continue using this. I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't understand where power corporate companies are dictating to the government what they are and what they're not going to do. You and I can't do that.
And
we wouldn't be allowed to do that. And now it's devastating not only myself, my business, my family, but everybody else in this area's business and families.
And
to the point that we don't even know what's going to happen in the future. Are we going to be able to exist in our businesses? And it doesn't look good right now.
And Stephen Power, the Wall Street Journal, I gather the White House has sent a mobile medical facility down there today.
Yeah, they've responded in a number of ways. There have been concerns that have been raised about the health impacts on the workers who are doing some of the relief efforts. So we may get some more information from the government today on what are those health impacts. I wanted to ask a question of Mike. Mike, what do people in your industry think of some of the measures that the Obama administration is now putting in place to try to prevent another accident like this? And what I'm referring to specifically is the fact that on Sunday night, the Interior Department announced new restrictions that essentially prohibit the issuance of new deepwater drilling permits for at least 6 months, and also prohibit companies from doing exploratory drilling in deep water, even if they already have permits. And I'm just wondering, how do people in your industry feel about it? Because we know the oil and gas industry isn't happy about it. We know that some people in Louisiana aren't happy about it, even though they're upset about this spill and angry at this company. Obviously, this industry provides a lot of jobs and possibly helps support your industry indirectly. So I'm just wondering, what do you think of that particular step?
Well, you know, I can honestly say that we are gravely affected by this tragedy. But on the same token, I also understand how important the petroleum industry is to this country. And I have to be a realist when it comes to that. And I personally am not in favor of them shutting down the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, especially with the rigs that we're currently under drilling operations. One, because it is a large part of our economic catalyst that drives Louisiana and the rest of the country. And I think that it'll reach out to further more problems as a result to this catastrophe. And quite honestly, I mean, if you look really directly to the information that's coming out now, BP had information that well was having some complications a month prior to the accident. In fact, that there was memorandums or emails sent back and forth to the government in reference to what projects were going on and what problems they were having. And it seemed to me, in just from a layman's point of view, that they were overlooking certain things and just kind of put them on the side and continue drilling, even though that they knew that the risks were mounting and the possibility of a disaster existed. So I don't know if you can really blame the rest of the petroleum industry as a result of this accident, because there seems to be evidence mounting now that this probably could have been circumvented. And if, in fact, it could have been circumvented, then we really have some serious questions and serious issues that need to be brought to the attention as a result of this accident.
Stephen,
and if I could just continue and put you on the spot a bit, Mike, because you know Louisiana, you know the economics of it and the politics of it. If the federal government had shut down that well a month prior to this accident and thus maybe potentially averting the accident, that obviously would have had an effect to some degree on the commercial operations of the rig, on employment. I'm just wondering, what would have been the reaction, you think, of the political establishment in Louisiana? Would they have supported that action? The reason I ask is because we're living in a time right now when there are a lot of Americans very skeptical about government, big government stepping in, regulating too much of the economy. And I'm just curious, what would have been the response among people you know in Louisiana and the leadership there if the federal government had shut down this well?
Let me just understand the question. And from the way I understand it, I don't think that the federal government would have shut down the well only for the fact that that wouldn't have been their position at that point, because BP themselves, that was more of an inner office, or if you want to call it an inner corporation knowledge at the point at the rig, at the site itself. I mean, it was up to BP themselves, and shut down is just for a temporary time, you know, to correct the situation and check into the possible problems that they were having with the BOP or whatever, and then correct those issues. I don't know if it was really – I don't know the structure as far as the hierarchy, how that would follow down if the government would have mandated a shutdown on the rig. And if they would have, you're only talking one particular platform at the time.
Right.
I don't think that it's necessary for all the deep water platforms at this time to be shut down.
All right. Let me ask you one final question. What do you think could be done at this point that is not being done?
As far as what?
As far as stopping this leak, as far as the cleanup is concerned.
Well, again, that's above and beyond my expertise.
Okay.
The only thing that I can comment on that is that I personally would like to see the government come in and say, okay, BP, you take control of capping this well. You take control of making sure that you stop the flow of the oil that's coming out from the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico and penetrating our waters and our shorelines.
All right.
Now, what they need to do is BP is worrying about the cleanup and taking care of everything on the inshore. Let that be taken care of by the local governments and the local contractors. Let them concentrate on the offshore stuff. What I'm more concerned about right now is them responding to our problems, our financial needs.
All right.
That are the devastation in our families' lives and our businesses, because we've seen the disruption in that, and we don't see any end in future, and we don't see any dialogue. We hear BP on the press saying, we're going to make everybody whole, we're going to make the community whole, we're going to make the estuaries whole. Well, this is the richest estuary in the United States, and I understand they've got to concentrate on taking care of that well and stopping that oil, but in the meantime, we have catastrophic damages affecting the livelihoods of many, many, many businesses and people along the Gulf Coast, and especially
right.
In the Venice area.
I have to stop you there, Mike Frenette. He's captain of a chartered fishing boat out of Venice, Louisiana. Good luck to you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
And
you all have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments.
Diane, I think that one of the things Mike's last plea to us reminds us is these environmental disasters are also economic disasters. 25% of our fishing shut down, families out of work. Mike is a charter boat captain, and he's losing clients. And so what we're confronted here with is an economic disaster as well as an environmental
but
disaster.
But, you know, I'm fascinated by his response to your point, Stephen Power, namely that given the balance between the oil industry and the economy of the area, he doesn't want to see that stopped.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that is one of the fascinating aspects of it. I think it speaks to our complicated attitudes about oil and fossil fuels.
Stephen Power, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, L.G. Holstein, the Environmental Defense Fund, Tad Potsek at the University of Texas at Austin. Thank you all so much. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.